Welcome to Turn a Page, the official comic book club for Nerd Initiative. Each week, the NI Bullpen will be covering the world of comics, talking to creators, deep diving into some fantastic stories, and much more. Now let's hand it over to the team and turn a page.
And what is going on, everyone? It is Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you are tuned into the Nerd Initiative Streaming Network for another edition of Turn a Page, the official comic book club for Nerd Initiative. My name is Ken M. You know me as the host of the ODPH podcast. I'm also Nerd Initiative's comics editor-in-chief. To my left, your right, he has to do his own intro because it's in his contract.
Wait, we got a contract? But coming at you live and direct straight from the folding chairs in the ODPH studios. My name is Off the Cuff Tom, Nerd Initiative's pop culture connoisseur, Matt Ken. Always a pleasure.
And joining us, our other member of the Nerd Initiative bullpen that's here each and every week. You know him as one half of the dynamic duo of Drafts and Dialogue that brings you that pop culture knowledge you need in your system to get by in your daily lives. Welcome to the show, the one and only Matt Roth from Hops Geeks News. Matt,
what's going on? What up, everybody? How we doing? It's Tuesday. We're feeling good. You're looking good. Man, I'm ready.
I love how like high key I am, and Matt's like, what's up?
Well, I know. It was a little change of pace, to be honest. But you know what? That's what we do here because we bring you so many different voices talking about all things comics. And this week's episode is one that we definitely have to dive into. But before we get going on that, we have to give you a little assignment because there's so much coming on Nerd Initiative streaming services. There is something you need to do, and that is a little homework assignment, as our guy in the chair says.
Guy in the chair.
And that is to make sure you click the subscribe button on YouTube or wherever you're watching us from. But you want to really make sure you're doing it on YouTube because there's a lot of bonus things that are just going to be strictly aired on YouTube coming up in April and beyond. So you definitely don't want to miss out on that. Click the bell icon for notifications and make sure to tap that like because it lets our bosses at Nerd Initiative know that you like the content that you're seeing on here and you want to see more of it because trust us, change is coming, folks. And there's a lot more shows coming on the way, so you definitely don't want to miss out when that is all unfolding. And you want to make sure you click on that QR code because we love QR codes here at Nerd Initiative. It'll take you right to the website. You can sign up for the newsletter, and you won't miss out on any event that's happening at the home of pop culture positivity.
I got to get used to this flipped camera again.
Yeah, it's all over the place. I can't keep up.
It's throwing Tom off his game, so that's always a good thing because it keeps him on his toes. It keeps you on your toes if you're watching us live, and we definitely like to see you in the chat. Shout out to Brad, who's in there each and every week.
B-Rad.
So we definitely want to give him his his credit as well, and we want you to dive in on the subject we're going to be talking about because today we are going to be deep diving into a story that has made a reappearance.
Copyright.
I know, I was waiting on the button to click in for that. But we are going to be talking about a story that was just featured on the hit return to Disney Plus of X-Men 97. So the animated show showcasing the Children of the Atom has really been a home run with two episodes just dropping. And one that really stood out and definitely had a lot of fans talking. But it's one that if you're a comic book reader like myself that has been reading X-Men stories for eons, you knew about this story, and it's kind of interesting to see how it played out on the small animated screen, and that is The Trial of Magneto. So this is the story from Uncanny X-Men 200 from 1985. Chris Claremont and John Romita Jr. are on the creative side of things, and this was a little game-changing at the time because, as you see on the cover, this was a book that really kind of threw everything off-center because Magneto had been such a long-standing enemy of the X-Men. And to see the change of dynamic here that he's now in a different costume, he's now facing trial for what's going on. We are going to be talking some spoilers on it, so we definitely want to give you the fair warning where you're watching. But Matt, let me start with you. When you're seeing this cover alone, what's the first things going through your head?
Magneto looking like a real silver fox out here, looking real jacked, baby. He's been mentally lifting up some steel and looks like he's been pumping some iron with those arms of his. But all in all, I like the suit change. I found it's very different. Obviously, we're used to seeing him. It's a very classic suit. He's got the helmet on, whereas this is more of a vulnerable take because most of the time when you see Magneto on the cover of things or within the pages, he's in some dominant looking position, whereas this one, he's in cuffs, he's in chains, he is almost submitted himself to whatever is going on while the battle rages on behind him between mutants. And so it's very captivating right off the get-go.
Mm-hmm. Tom, how about you?
I was, one, shocked because I've never seen this particular outfit of Magneto.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely just, big ol' M. I thought it was a little cheesy, to be honest. But then I realized it's the 80s.
Yep.
Because then I looked at everybody else and go, yeah, it's the 80s, to be quite honest. But like Matt said, this is Magneto in a completely different light. I still want the helmet. I like the helmet.
I do.
Yeah. This was a situation when you see that costume for the first time, like it throws you for a loop because you are going, wait a second, this isn't the Magneto we all know. We're seeing a big fight going on around him and we're seeing him actually like imprisoned. And to think about what he's been able to do against the X-Men for this, lineage of time, it's really a moment that stands out and really just, grabs you right from the gate. And then when you go into the opening page too, you get the big headline, The Trial of Magneto, and you're seeing him getting walked, into the courtroom, so to speak. And this is just a situation too that you're going like, okay, this isn't just, a click and bait, so to speak, situation with the cover. Like, he's actually apprehended. And then you get like this little background about like what he's been about. So it's perfect for a new reader too, with the page that kind of gives his origin story, so to speak, because you do get to see like what he's gone through a little bit, and it kind of shows, his progression as a character. And that's something too that it stands out, because you do see like a little homage to his time against the X-Men, which borrows from the iconic X-Men number one cover,
mm-hmm.
too. I don't know if anybody else picked up on that, to where you kind of see the ultimate case where you see him imprisoned by Freedom Force. And that is something too, which I don't know if you gentlemen knew about or not, with Freedom Force, that was a thing.
Marvel Suicide Squad?
So to speak, with mutants.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Matt, did you know about them as well?
I did not. I'm not as well read up on the X-Men, I guess. Most people always, like anytime I've talked to anybody, they always start their comic book journeys with X-Men. I never really did. Mm-hmm. I've been very in and out of the X-Men universe throughout the years. So there's a lot that I don't know about the X-Men, to be perfectly honest with you. And that's why I love doing this, because it helps me learn and helps me read really cool X-Men stories.
And I wasn't really aware of this whole storyline either, but I knew like Freedom Force, because I know I've said multiple times, I had series one and two of the cards and I knew them back to front and front to back, mm-hmm. with every single little did you know blurb and their power levels. So this one, yeah, I knew that one.
Yeah. It was a situation like for me, I've always been a Marvel reader, like first and foremost, like that's how I got into comics. And at the time too, Spider-Man had always been my number one go-to. But the X-Men were the biggest thing in comics at the time. That nowadays, you might sit there and go like, well, I really don't understand how that point is. During that time from like the mid-80s to like the 2000s, X marked the spot, literally, at the comic shop. And the run that Chris Claremont did as writer of them is legendary, because a lot of the stories that you see influenced today comes from his run. And with various artists that we see him work with, I mean, John Byrne has always been one he's synonymous with, Jim Lee to a degree too, when they had their run as well. It's one of those, pairings that you can really kind of get the voice of what really makes these mutants interesting. And he took some liberties with this, because as the next image that we show, it's a group shot, because you get the sense of what is going on with Xavier's now getting put on trial. The X-Men at the time are getting transported from Asgard, which is where this image of that's on the screen right now, because they were not on Earth. They were in Asgard, home of Thor, for a little bit, in some great stories as well. So while they've been away, Magneto has been in prison. Charles Xavier is now going to be one of five people that are trying to sort out the punishment that is going up against him, because he's getting tried for his, his crimes against humanity, so to speak.
And one thing I loved about the tribunal, it was a very 80s choice, because, you yeah. had the five biggest, military powers in the world making the call on that. And the fact that they did the old, the Hague's nice, but F this, here's the Castle of Justice or whatever the heck of what they call
well,
it.
Well, I like that they did it in Paris because it's like how many massive things have taken place in Paris? You know, the Treaty of Versailles, you know, World War One, World War Two have all ended there. Most treaties, you know, the Revolutionary War, they did the treaty right there in Paris. So it's like, that's how you know the scope of this event right here, how much history goes into Paris being the spot.
It's yes. Symbolism.
Well, about the symbolism.
Yeah. Symbolism. And they even tie it into right now, if you've been reading Fall of the Powers or Fall of the House of X going on, which is bookending the Krakoan era right now. Like they do a little throwback to it, which I'm not sure how many readers get when they start picking it up. So we do see, though, Charles Xavier is on the defense with Gabrielle Heller, who we do know from the comics does have a connection to a very big mutant as well. But they are now responsible for defending him. And there is a shot of a pair of twins that are in the Mediterranean that a lot of fans don't really know who they are.
Nope.
And they were somebody that when you find out their background, that they're related to one Baron von Strucker.
Yeah.
This throws everything off because what they don't realize is he had mutant children known as Fenris. So to see them getting excited about taking out Magneto, that's an interesting play. And then we go back to the story, though. The X-Men have now appeared in France. Nobody knows what they're doing there.
Quoi?
And even at the time, too, they're just coming back from Asgard. They have no idea exactly why they're there doing what they are.
Quoi?
And you see that when they show up, the guards there are drawing their weaponry on them. The X-Men are kind of just defending what they can do. And you're seeing, though, a nice display of some powers going on as well, because you do see Rachel Summers, who has gone through a wide variety of codenames in the comics, is implementing her powers. And this time, like, her nickname is Phoenix, because she is an alternate version or timeline of the daughter of Cyclops and Jean Grey. So it does kind of give a showcase of what's going on there.
Un powers fantastique.
Oui.
Oui.
So when you're seeing this all play out, like the X-Men are just getting thrown there because they were sent back from Loki to you know be with Charles Xavier. All the while, Xavier is fallen ill to a mysterious illness.
Très mal, très chou.
He couldn't even get out of bed for a second there. And Scott was like, dude, you all right? And he's like, just give me a minute.
Yeah, because he's not really sure what's going on. And it's kind of he knows the gravity of the situation with Magneto, that he needs to be there for his best friend. And I mean, going through their history too, they have they're the equivalent of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, if you will,
yeah,
in pro wrestling. They are the best of friends and the worst of enemies at times, but their connection, like they're always there for each other. And you see how this plays out. And I'll start with Tom. Like when you're seeing this moment where Xavier is trying to hide his illness from Scott, his most loyal student, like, what are you kind of taking away from this moment?
I was triggered.
Really?
I think just before we met, I was hiding the fact that I was having heart problems to my wife. So oh. I was a bit triggered.
Fair enough. Let me
be honest on the internet. And also, I had a what the fuck, Chuck moment, literally, because Chuck didn't have his wheelchair.
Yes. Well, like I say, different variations.
Yeah, the artistic license that comes with it. I think it's really, this was a great scene simply for the fact of like, I want to be there for you. I want to help you. Let me in. Like, I love you this much. I'm getting so angry at you. I can relate 4,000% on this. So like I said, a little triggered.
Matt, how about you?
No, I mean, just what Tom said, right? There's a lot of personal experiences we can all pull from this. There's always that one person that just means you look up to so much, whether you know them or maybe you don't, and you know they're going through something, but you don't know exactly what. And then from Professor Xavier, he's the leader of men, the X-Men to be exact. He is their all power, all knowing, strong. He's the support. So if something were to happen to him, what happens to the X-Men? What happens to mutants? Because he's kind of been the glue holding both the human world and the mutant world kind of together in this weird, not really peace, because there's never really peace between mutants and X-Men or, you know, humans, but like he's on the tribunal for this trial. Like they have a mutant on the trial, you know, which is very unprecedented. And it's just, you can see a lot of simulators in your own life. And so it's a very powerful moment.
Yeah, no, it definitely hits the moments there too, especially if you know the history, you know, with Scott and Charles. Like I say, Scott was the first mutant recruited to his school for gifted youngsters. So when you see this moment play out, like, it definitely hits. And then we start going into the trial. And that really is an impactful situation too, because when you start seeing this unfold, obviously the majority of humans are not exactly pro Magneto, and rightfully so, because of his crimes against humanity. But when you start seeing this council start addressing his history, it does play into, you know, the struggles between mutant kind and humankind, and really kind of test the bond of Charles Xavier's dream to the masses. I mean, would you say that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just the fact of what Charles was trying to do, and on the flip of it with Magneto, it's just, where Magneto goes in his speech really says a lot. And then at the same time, how they identified it. You know, every bad guy is always the good guy in his story. And I think Magneto is a prime example of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he thought he was doing what was best for mutant kind, regardless of what he was doing at humankind.
Yeah. Like, it's one of those situations when you see this really play out. It's like, this is the basis of all X-Men stories. And just to see it just put in this manner, I thought for the time it was very interesting, because you also have a lot of, you know, a side plot going on too, where it's Magneto supporters are committing acts of violence and trying to establish, you know, their support for him. And they do show like a scene where, you know, they're taking out a plane, and just the imagery with the heat says "Free Magneto." Like, this one, I had feelings about it when I saw it, because I did know about who Freedom Force was. And I'm going, man, that looks an awful light, like Pyro. Like, I'm just sitting there watching this and going like,
no.
Yeah, you know, it could definitely play out in that manner. So like, as the trial is progressing too, you do see Magneto is addressing everything that's going on. The X-Men at the time are really trying to figure out a game plan of, you know, how to address this, because it's, for them, it's a tough pill to swallow that Charles is defending, you know, Magneto. They know that how dangerous he is, and like, to what lengths they're doing, and just like how they can, you know, make sense of this whole situation.
But that is prime Charles Xavier right there.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say it, man. Like, this Charles, yeah, and
what I didn't say from him.
No, I was.
Yeah. Like, how, like, Charles Wu.
Yeah. Their relationship is my favorite in comic books for this reason. It shows that not everything is black and white. There is no clear cut black and white in the world. And it's Magneto comes from a place of, he means well. Yes, he goes about it wrong. But like, you know, Magneto also steps up to the plate when he's called upon at the same time. And he's also from a persecuted world where he has grown up, and, you know, he's a victim of the Holocaust. Right. And so like, to him, he doesn't want to ever go through that again for his people. And he's very much in a way to hopefully make that not happen again. And Charles is like, very much like, we can bridge this gap, work with me, and their relationship and the things that they do, particularly in this story. And, you know, it's just, it's peak comic books. Magneto is like the peak sympathetic villain, because it's like, wow, he has a lot of points. He just kind of goes about it a wrong way.
And one thing I want to add on this is, I honestly did not realize that they introduced this whole idea of Magneto being a Holocaust survivor back in the 80s. I was more aware of it when they did the original X-Men run, the movies. Mm. The Patrick Stewart movies. So to see that this is well established canon, I honestly, not knowing at the time, was like, oh, that's cool. That's really smart. That's really freaking smart now that I think about it, considering, you know, but knowing, like, okay, cool. This is long established canon, because comics, and I don't read a lot.
Yeah, but this is where you can jump in and really pick out some things.
I just do my homework.
Yeah. Because, like I say, when we see the trial scene play out too, like, say, this is a very intense moment as you're seeing Magneto just face everybody, and you're seeing just the pros and cons that are going against him too. Like I say, it just really exemplifies what is transpiring,
mm-hmm.
and how this is not exactly going to be an easy road to prove his innocence with so much, you know, animosity towards him. So it's one that,
is putting it very mildly.
Well, yeah. Well, you have to think about what he's done. And then, you know, to see where things lead after that, you know, you do see, obviously, he does have some very, very stiff competition from one Sir James Jaspers. And he is not backing down from his argument as well, too, even though Magneto is being relatively calm under the situation. Did anybody else, like, understand that?
Oh, yeah.
He was playing the crowd. He knew that if he stayed in his lane, mm-hmm. he was going to find support in that. If he was penitent, he was going to get a better, you know, more backing, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. Because, I mean, he has to just be as smooth as he can here. Because if he's not, you know, it's really going to throw everything off for what he's trying to do. Because he's ultimately trying to work the crowd. And then, like I say, when you start seeing that image, and we went back to this about how the crowd is reacting, this is why he's trying to do what he's doing. Because with seeing how the X-Men have to defend themselves, and just mm-hmm. even that little news blurb that's in the corner there, the X-Men attack hospital. Like, this yeah. is what they're up against. So when they have to go back and really defend it, it really makes for an interesting story going on. And there was a side piece that was thrown in here, too, that I definitely want to get your guys' opinion on. And chat, super chat, make your voice heard about this, too.
Oui, quoi?
We did have a side plot going on here with one Madeline Pryor and Corsair and Princess Lilandra from the Shi'ar Empire. And Tom, I will get your take first. Matt, yours too. I mean, what did you think about this side story going on?
Unnecessary.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. With everything going on with Charles right here, I understand why she came back, but... like involving Scott's dad and everything, you know, just give me Gladiator, right? That's his name.
Yep.
Yeah. Just give me friggin' Mop Top or Broomhead. I'm good. That was it. But like to involve so many pages, I think there could have been better writing about the trial.
Matt.
I agree. Also, all I could see from his dad was basically, Ben Stiller's character in Dodgeball.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, Corsair is definitely an interesting character, but especially, too, the dynamic that is there, because Madeline Pryor, as we know, is the clone of Jean Grey, as we find out years later, and Corsair is actually Scott Summers' father, and just the weird family reunion there, so to speak. Yeah, it's something that is... the Summers family tree is one that you can definitely get
not linear.
Yeah, well, you have to watch those F-bombs on YouTube, my friend.
Oh,
so at screwy. That being said, you definitely, or that's a side story that comes into play, but it does factor into the relationship between Lilandra and Charles Xavier, which will definitely play in a factor as we go on further. But the trial is definitely heating up, and it's one that you see the X-Men are now getting more involved because they're seeing how people are trying to really put a bad light to Magneto's name by committing all these acts in his honor, and he has nothing to do with this. So when we start seeing that action sequence play out, this is where things get really back down to business. And one thing that, like, I love seeing as an X-Men fan is just when they start getting into the action, they really start tearing into it, and they really start being the X-Men that you see on the cartoons. Like, when we compare it to the fight scene against the Sentinels.
Baseball special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I say.
We did that in my D&D campaign once.
Oh, I'm sure. There's a lot of people that have done that in their time.
We did the whole math for it, too. It was awesome.
Yeah. But to see that sequence play out, too, as they're fighting, and especially to see that sequence, you know, once again, too, that when you see that image show up, too, and you see especially at the bottom... really just jumps out too, because you see right here, they go fastball special right at the bottom of that page.
I love it. Dude. I love it.
And that is such vintage X-Men right there.
Yes.
Perfectly.
Yeah. If you're going to have that fight, like, you can hear that music from the TV show.
I better get this in Deadpool 3. That's all I have to say.
Oh,
some joking form or another.
I fully bank we're going to have that. I really do. But then, like I say, you start seeing the X-Men are taking care of business. But all the while, they have to worry about the trial. And that is still playing into, you know, such a key factor here as well. Because then you have the party crashers show up, which Fenris, like I will say, like looking at it at the time too, it was an interesting choice to make them villains here. But then again, knowing their role in the story they do make more perfect sense to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody else thought about that.
That one went over my head again because not knowing who they were. But I will say about the trial, I did appreciate the fact that they were trying to give Magneto as much of a fair shake as possible, to the point that the head part of the tribunal said, okay, you saw what your friend across the aisle did here. Let's have a little bit of decorum as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like put the, you know, the prosecutor in his place. It's like, all right, we get it. You're angry. Now use your words. That's what we want. That's what you're here for. Chill out. I appreciated that.
Yeah. Matt, how about you?
Yeah, I don't really know a whole lot about them, to be honest, but I think they made sense. And like, you need something like this to happen almost, right? Because this trial was never going to go smoothly, and it can't go smoothly for the impact that Magneto has on both sides of the fence. But I will agree with Tom that, like, I thought the trial was very well written, very well done. One thing I really appreciated was that they really dove into, like, the core problems in, like, a very, I don't want to say adult way, but a very intellectual kind of way. It was very smart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I thought they really did, too. But I think for what Fenris was involved with, you didn't have to have like an apocalypse type villain here, because you needed somebody that is on that lower tier just to make that impact. Because like, had it been an Omega level threat, I think the trial would have gone completely sideways.
Okay. So if you're saying that Fenris is, let's say, a C-leaguer.
Yes.
Okay. Who would you say is a B, and then an absolute would have been a beast, an A, if you had to swap them out?
Okay, so I got to think at the time from 85, because I know Apocalypse was not around then.
Yep.
Sinister, I think, was just coming out around then.
Okay.
So you could have done, even though it would not have fit the character per se, you could have done the Hellfire Club, like in some kind of capacity. You could have, like working behind the shadows, but they would have had some help doing it. It's kind of tough because, like I say, a lot of those, you know, villains at the time, like Magneto, had always been just the A level.
Mm-hmm.
So to see somebody really stand off with him, Chad, Super Chad, you could throw your picks in too. You know, that's where it kind of really gets a little crazy. Like, you could have done something maybe with the Brood, but I don't know how that would have exactly gone over. Because, I mean, it's aliens. I mean, granted, it's the X-Men, so Weird is known to be part of the territory. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I think at that time, like, you just needed that C-level villain to go in there. Like, even, you know, to a degree, like, you know, the Vanisher.
Okay, what about the Morlocks?
See, the Morlocks are not exactly villains.
No, and that's the thing. I wouldn't say that maybe I should reiterate or adjust here. Instead of villains, what other mutants do you think would have come to Magneto's aid?
Oh, to his aid?
Yeah, to say, hey, we're standing up for you. Because, I mean, what really would have been a big shock is if, say, the Morlocks showed up. And not necessarily to, like, bust down the doors and do all this, but just to show that moral support. Even though they're on very opposite sides of the spectrum, they're still mutants, all for mutant kind.
It would have been, but I think with the Morlocks being more underground to make a public statement like that, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, I think at that time, had it been another supervillain showing up, like outside of the X universe, like that would have been a bigger statement.
Like Dr. Doom?
Yeah, I was going to say Doom showing up, and that would have really swayed a vote a certain way.
Yeah, he's right next door. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, that could be something too. That's a very interesting question. I will give you on that. I don't think the Morlocks would though. Like I say, that wouldn't be the MO. But you know, to think about it, it's like, yeah, I would say like the Hellfire Club would have had something involved with it at the time, just because of how they work.
Yeah, and their history together makes perfect sense.
Oh, yeah, completely. But that's where you kind of need that C level to get you to, you know, there. Because, you know, like I say, Magneto can just do enough. Fenris's powers, they have to, you know, hold hands and they can do, deadly energy blasts. But like I say, for him to show up, and especially how he handles business there, because he has the whole world watching him and he has to be on his best behavior. So he can't really go the direction like he normally would. So to see like how he handles this, he's relatively calm, but he's, you know, allowing the situation to be held until you get a situation here where you see, lo and behold, who is ready to hurt one of the twins? And I believe that is our Sir James Jasper.
Mm-hmm.
He was very quick to pick that rock up.
Yeah.
Objection, objection.
Yeah, so as he's getting ready to do his business, you see Magneto is the one to kind of sway everything and flip everything on its head, because he's the one kind of talking him down a little bit and pointing out, like, you complain about me and my actions. Look at what you just did. And it's a very interesting, you know, predicament as it plays out. I mean, when I'm seeing this, that's what I'm getting. Matt, what are you thinking when you're seeing this play?
I mean, it's just the hypocrisy at its finest, right? Like, they're, again, very quick. Magneto, you've done such bad things. But as we're about to find out, Magneto just comes back with, like, we just want to live on this planet, man. Humans just want to kill each other, fight wars, do all these dastardly things. You're about to very quickly, swiftly kill this individual here who thought they had my best interests in mind. We just want to live. We're two sides of the same coin, going about it various different ways, but we ultimately want the same thing. It's just to be left in peace.
Yeah. Tom?
He who lives in a glass house should not throw stones.
Ooh.
Or pick up ones for Fenris.
Yes, very much so. So as we see, I mean, it does start getting a little more crazy involved, but Magneto is sitting there. And ultimately, like, it comes down to Xavier makes a play, because after, you know, Magneto makes the save, Xavier's true nature comes out here. And this scene really dictates the entire issue, because the trial forces Xavier's hand to say, like, Eric, I'm dying. And when you have this moment to see Magneto, who's already, like, gone through enough per se with this issue and the roller coaster of, like, his ultimate play here, to see his best friend dying in front of him and the wish that's, you know, being forced on him, you take over my team.
Yeah.
Like, at the time, this is unheard of. So to see those words come out of Xavier's mouth, especially when you have Scott Summers, the heir apparent, waiting there to take the reins, it's really, like, you know, a mind-blowing sequence. And to see just the impact of Charles's words, like the dying wish, because they've been, you know, fighting each other for so many years. Like, to put in comics terms, you're talking over 20 years from 63 to 85.
Fighting, I think, is the wrong choice of word. Okay. I think being mutual adversaries would probably be a better way to put it, because I think they both kept each other at bay. I don't think that, for me, the way I perceive it, it's not a full out drag on, you know, drag down brawl, like, oh, you stole my wife kind of fight that you would have between two brothers like that. I think they were, like Matt said, both opposite sides of the same coin with different objectives and different portrayals of how they see it.
That could be. I mean, Matt, you got any vote on that?
It shakes the comic book world to its core, right? Yeah. Here.
Oh, God,
this does. I also do want to really point out something about this scene, is that this is kind of like one of the few times we see Magneto truly vulnerable and really let his, like, feelings come out, like his humanity come out, because there's his he's always been stoic, needing to be like this chiseled, strong voice. But here it's just him and his best friend, and he's dying in his arms, and you get to see the human side of Magneto that is in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, this is a rare sight to see, especially knowing the history that they've all had.
Are you saying that the iron will of the Master of Magnetism had bent?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this is the first time. This was such a great take by Claremont with Magneto, that we will see, like, in future iterations, more sides of this come to play. But at the time, like, this is massive to have just the weight of the heir of Charles Xavier's legacy thrown on your shoulders. And even with his powers, can he hold that weight? Like, that is the takeaway here. And then, like, it really comes to fruition too, because when you have Corsair and Lilandra show up and they're, you know, basically saying, like, this is the deal. And they're saying, like, yeah, Charles is dying. We can save him. He has to leave. Like, this moment right here, to sum up in words, it's powerful for what it is, but it's a situation that, you know, Magneto has to make this decision right away. Like, he doesn't have time to think about this. Like, to have this thrown on your lap, like, you have to make a split decision about your best friend, your legacy, everything involved with this. It's a tough call to make. No. I mean, chat, nope. Super chat, how would you have handled this situation?
Nope. This is a yes, do it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, this is something that maybe, you know, I get it as some people are born for greatness, other people have greatness thrust upon them. This is an exact prime example of it. Magneto does not have the time to think about it. He loves this man this much. It's a no-brainer. Like, if I was in that situation, okay, gotcha. Mm. That's it.
Matt, how about you?
No, I mean, it's a no-brainer, man. Take him. Goodbye. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is my best friend, man. I do whatever.
It's a clean sweep. Yeah, I do the same thing too. Like I say, this is a no-brainer. Even if it's something that goes against like my plan, like, I'm sorry, if like this is my best friend and it's to save him, you go, I'll take care of it, I'll worry about everything else. Like, yeah, this is a split second decision. It doesn't take any time. But to watch it unfold as a reader, like, that's like, holy smokes. Like, everything you know about Magneto at this moment changes. And that's like how impactful this moment is. So then when you get the fallout after it, you're like, what just happened? And it really sinks in to, you know, what you're seeing play out. And to see like those moments just really jump in. Like I say, you see that last page that pops up and you just see the moment here where it all sits in. The Magneto has now been acquitted because he's shown his humanity, which is kind of like a very, very interesting take. And you see that the rest of the X-Men are like, well, where's Charles? They can't find him. You see Rachel Summers like crying, like, I can't sense him. I can't see him. He's gone. And then that last moment where you see, you know, Romita's art here and the tear coming out of, you know, Magneto's eye as he's just like, you know, saying that goodbye. Like, how powerful of a moment that is.
Dude, you see the last panel of this comic is Magneto shedding a tear. How many times has that ever happened in comic book? You know what I'm saying? Like, how many times have we ever seen Magneto crying? That speaks for itself right here.
I am the speechless.
Yeah. Like I say, that's the easiest way you could describe it. Like, you just see that moment. It's like everything's changed. Like, when you talk about anniversary issues, milestone issues, you know, when you get to a, you know, 25, 50, 7,500, when you get to the 200th issue here, I really think they went for the fences at the time and they hit it because everything we know at this time as the stat quo is changed forever.
Mm-hmm.
And to see how this goes in that last parting shot, like as a reader of the series at the time, you're going like, what is this? If you just picked it up because it was a casual cover, you're going, oh, wait a sec. What just happened here? And to see how this all spirals into where the direction goes after here, it really makes for some very, very interesting stories. Like I was, you know, I have to say, you have to really keep it dated to where it was.
Well, let's throw this out here too. Do you think that, you know, being our comics guru editor in chief guy as it is, was this polarizing not just for the X-Men fans, but also for comics in general? Did this change storytelling in the broad spectrum across, you know, all the big books?
That's a great question. I'm going to say you felt more of an impact if you were a Marvel reader.
Okay.
Because you've always had villains slip to be heroes for a long time in Marvel. Best case example, Quicksilver, Scarlet Witch, Hawkeye, Avengers. So it's not so much of a shock to the system per se, but I think at this time, though, it sent shockwaves more through Marvel. And I wouldn't say like a DC, because DC was kind of doing their own thing at this time.
Mm-hmm.
But to see the main villain of one of the most popular teams in all of comics decide to change sides, and let alone like, if I can't beat them, I join them, to like literally pull that whole Steph Curry or Kevin Durant to the Golden State Warriors, so to speak, in kind of that sense. Like, it's a wild thing to take. So I would say more so for Marvel.
Okay.
More so like,
well, I don't mean as far as how it affected the Marvel universe itself. I mean, as far as storytelling in comic books.
I would say it made a blip.
Okay.
I wouldn't say like it was a revolutionary take per se. Like when you think about comics that really like change everything, I think had Magneto stayed there a while, like, you know, like I really had like a deep run per se, then maybe. But like I say, in my opinion, because I didn't feel the run was deep about that, but that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
I think in that situation, like, it's game changing for its time, but I don't think it was like where you're going with it. Like, I don't think it was on that level.
Okay.
That's just me. But chat, super chat, obviously throw your votes in there about this, you know, and, you know, like I say, how game changing was this moment for comic storytelling overall? Cause like I say, when I hear that from my opinion, I think Watchmen. Like Watchmen is, you want to talk a game changer? Watchmen changed everything.
Yeah.
There's a whole different, like, there's before Watchmen and after Watchmen in comics. So, like I say, when you say something like that, like, that's where my head goes. So, it's something in that situation that it kind of plays out, too. Mike is asking in the chat if anyone's read the recent revival of Magneto. Yeah, I have. I think it's interesting. A lot of moving parts in that book. But I do think it's an interesting read to get from point A to point B with what is going on with Magneto. And I think whatever comes out of this is going to play a big factor in the X-Men re-up this summer. So, but it's been an interesting read, I will say that. So, that being said, though, a great question, though, Micah. Please keep throwing more chats. You know, we definitely can answer anything you throw at us here.
We have Ken.
Yeah. This is true.
Hardest working man in comics.
Okay.
As the plaque says. So that being said, though, Matt, let me start with you. We talked about a lot of good things in this book. Was there anything that you really was like, this is bad? Or anything that, I shouldn't say bad, but anything you really didn't like or didn't think really fit in?
Well, yeah, I guess, you know, the inclusion of Summer's parents didn't really felt, that whole Jean Grey side plot thing that they kind of threw in there didn't, just felt like a, are you trying to backdoor pilot another something there? It just didn't feel necessary. It didn't really add a whole lot to the overall story. But that's just a minor gripe. It's basically one page of why is this here. Other than that, that's it. I loved everything. I thought the art was very intricate. They did a lot of cool things with the costumes, a lot of cool things with the battle action sequences, the background, and primarily the writing is absolutely next level, very deep. There's a lot of depth to it. And I love this comic a lot.
Tom, how about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Matt and I are both on the same page. I think that the parts with, you know, the Star Jammers, and even I will say, because I have no relation to them, but I understand why having Fenris there was a bit of a speed bump, especially, you know, going back, not knowing the characters, it really felt off to me. But yeah, Matt is absolutely, they don't write comics like this anymore.
Mm-hmm. No,
there are words and there are phrases and there are sayings. Like, somebody did their homework to get the words right at the time, realizing the age of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
That is what got me right then and there.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I mean, I think the biggest thing for this is, I understand the Madeline Pryor thing because they wanted to touch base and do like a quick breakaway. But like the whole Madeline Pryor storyline, like looking back at it now, like that's the tough point. Because at the time you understand it, and then when you get the reveal and you start looking back at it, yeah, it's kind of a little bit awkward, so to speak, but it makes sense for where you go. And obviously what happens after that is really, really interesting. But yeah, I would say that it really didn't take too much away. I think just like the X-Men just getting thrown into just defending what was going on with the Magneto supporters, even though I love the action, it makes sense. It was just kind of like over and done too quickly.
Yeah.
And I thought that it was like, you know, it almost felt like a villain of the week, so to speak, which
yes,
I understand why that is, because the center of the story is Magneto. So you have to give the X-Men something to do, being their anniversary issue. So would they, you know, it's like basically they got their time in, got in and got out. So that I thought could have been done a little better per se, maybe, you know, a longer battle with like Fenris, maybe if they got more involved with it, but they couldn't really do it because at the end of the day, it was supposed to be centered around where Magneto was in the trial. And honestly, like a reflection of where he's been to where he's going And that's the biggest takeaway from this book too. So yeah, I'd say there's very little I didn't like about this. And even on the reread after it's been all these years, it was a situation that I was like, okay, I understand where they're doing at this time. And if you remember that, then it's good. If you're coming in as a new reader, it might throw you off a little bit. So, but that being said though, it is time to give this a grade. So chat, super chat. If you're watching us on Twitter, if you're watching us on Facebook, YouTube, Kick, Twitch, throw your grades in for this. We've talked about the book, but we have to give our stamp of approval on this. Out of 10, we'll start with Tom. What do you grade Uncanny X-Men 200, The Trial of Magneto?
8.5 X's out of 10.
8.5. All right. Very, very high score.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, how about you?
I'm slightly higher than 9 out of 10. I think it's really good. And just that little speed bump brought it from being a little bit better. So I'm going 9.
Yeah, I'm almost like at two grades about this. But because like I say, I remember reading this, you know, like very shortly after it came out, like a couple years, because I was kind of catching up on my X-Men stuff. So like at the time, like, you know, it's big and it's loud and it makes a lot of sense for like the dynamic if you're really kind of doing the history about Charles Xavier and Magneto. And this is a game-changing moment that you see, honestly, got reflected in the Krakoan era too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just how they worked together and how their ultimate dream was Krakoa and what the mutant age was at the time there. And then obviously things have gone in a very drastic different direction, which you should be reading now anyway too, by the way. So like I say, if I merge my grades together, which I am, I have to agree with Matt about this. I give this a 9 because at the time I gave it a little higher one because like being the fan,
mm-hmm.
like seeing this play out and seeing just Claremont's words really, like, for me, he is always the voice of the X-Men because just the different ideas that he did and ran with, and you think like, okay, this wouldn't work, but yet it does. This was another situation too that's like, okay, wait, Magneto's going to take over the school? Like, who does this? And to see this play out, I thought it really made a ton of sense to really try to do this. But you get back to the heart of the moment, and even with the trial, like Xavier with all his ailments is trying to do the right thing, and he gets there. But that final act where Xavier is dying and he's like, listen, you need to carry my legacy. You need to be the one to lead the X-Men. You can do this. And Magneto, even though this goes against the principles of what he's been trying to do for years, accepts it because that's his friendship with Charles. And at the end of the day, like that's what it would boil down to. And to see that moment too, especially at the end where he is literally saying goodbye to his best friend with a single teardrop out of his eye. Like that's the moment that hits and you're like, okay, I get it now. And it's like I say, to see where their relationship has gone since that point through the many iterations of Magneto stories throughout the years. Like I say, you can always say that one's in your top five, no matter what.
It goes back to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the mold from which we got everything.
Yeah. Well, like I say, when you want to talk about like their, you know, fight forever, so to speak. And like I say, in wrestling terms, I always compare them. They're Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. So this is, you know, a great thing. And I know Micah just threw it in the chat too. And I fully agree. This honestly shows how much Xavier believes in Magneto. And it's true. He never wants to fight him. If you watch any or read any X-Men comic, he never wants to fight him. Mm-mm. But he has to. And both of them don't want to fight each other because they both want the same thing. They just have different means of getting it.
Like I said, mutual adversaries.
Yeah. It plays out. And to even see how this goes against, you know, what we saw in X-Men 97.
Yeah.
I mean, well, let me ask you this. Which, give a higher or lower grade for the cartoon now that you've read the comic, that episode?
Okay. This, man, see, you got me. Good.
Yes.
Okay. So, putting into consideration where they went with the episode, I have a very different perspective on it. Because I know the X-Men from 2000 on. And even the original show, you know, the original show from the 90s. To go back to something that I wasn't aware of. For me, I can compartmentalize them two separately. I think the episode was great. I think that they took bits and pieces. I would have actually liked to seen more of this tribunal in the episode. I think they played up too much in the episode of the fight and the executioners, the Friends of Humanity and everything. I would have loved to have gotten more depth out of the trial itself. But that's just me. I still think they are two different things yet on the same wavelength. So they're still right where they're at.
Matt, how about you?
Good question.
You know, I'm with Tom. I really loved the episode. I would have liked to have seen a bit more of the trial, but I do also think that there's some things that they did kind of like in the episode, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, hopefully you have. There's that moment where he raises everybody up in the sky and he's like, don't make me let you down. And it's just like, dang, that's a mic drop moment. And I think it's powerful. And the things that they kind of twisted and turned a little bit to kind of take from this, it worked really well in the sense of the story that they're telling in the cartoon. Did one make the other better? I guess not necessarily, in my opinion. I thought they both did things really well.
Yeah, I think that part where he took them up is the part where Charles was their interpretation of, hey, this don't let me let you down. That's where I think they wanted to go with it. But obviously with Charles being dead, they had another interpretation of it by putting the, taking the executioner and the tribunal up.
I agree with you. I think it's two sides of the same coin, so to speak. I thought though where the cartoon went different, and chat, definitely throw your picks in about this too. Mike, I agree with you. Last episode was legit amazing too. To try doing this story without Charles Xavier in it is a difficult move to do it on the animated screen.
See, now you have the comic book as a baseline.
Right.
We didn't.
Right. That's why I wanted the comparison, because I was watching this play out. I go, how are you going to do this? And I thought for what they did, it's definitely comparable. It's on the same level. The only thing I didn't like about the cartoon in comparison is I thought they still had this villainous feel to Magneto, like that edge.
Well, you're supposed to not trust him quite yet,
right,
still.
Right, which I thought they did not like give that sense. Like in the comic, you can kind of see he's a little more warmed up, but that's because of Charles.
Yeah.
See, without Charles there, it makes sense of why he's more standoffish and more of like, he's doing this not because he wants to, but he kind of feels like he has to, even though he is warming up to it. And I thought they both told brilliant stories, but I just thought it was just like, it was lacking just that little moment because of the dynamic between Charles and Magneto. However, though, I mean, it's still a great episode. I actually loved the take they did with the executioner, because if you don't know that story, I mean, I just
found out before this, holy crap.
Yeah. Like I say, it was part of like the Marvel annuals movement where they're introducing new characters in each annual, which I'm going to say right now, chat, hold me to this. If Adam Xtreme shows up, you heard it here first. I'm just saying, I'm putting the karma out in the world for him. But I thought what they did here was very interesting with Friends of Humanity too, and especially if you know who's the head person of that, which I'm waiting to see if they're actually going to introduce that character here. There's a lot of different ways we can go with it, but I thought for what they tried doing, it might have been a different tone, but the message was still there that Xavier's dream weighs out over everything. And with Magneto taking that vision and running in a direction with it, it's still impactful nevertheless. And that's the big thing. That's why it's winning people over now that are just tuning in for the first time. And I hope they go back and read this issue and compare and contrast. But the only thing that will throw people off is you have to understand that history at the time.
Yeah.
That's going to be the only X factor, pun intended.
Ha! I didn't do it.
Yes. Well, I had to take one. I've been stealing thunder all day from you. So it's what I've been doing. So that being said, though, definitely go check this out at your comic shops. You really want to keep an eye out for this. And like I say, it's worth the read. It's definitely one that will give you a very interesting perspective on the relationship between Charles Xavier and Magneto. So definitely keep an eye out for X-Men 200, wherever you go get your comics. But speaking of comics, we have to talk about New Comic Book Day before we get out of here.
Yay.
And I fully agree with Micah in the chat too. As long as they never do Joseph on the show, I'll be happy as well. Yes. That's a whole different,
even I know that one.
That's a whole different ball of wax right there with Anytime we, I'm just going to hold off on that because we have to talk about happy things.
Yeah, new comics.
Like the new comic book day reviews and picks for the week. So let's start with our resident Power Ranger fan. And what are you picking up this week?
Ghostbusters. I mean, no, I'm going to be picking up Power Rangers. It's coming out tomorrow, issue 118. There was one big thing that happened with the Morphin Master spinoff, Power Rangers Unlimited, that led into this. Now, Missy and both Ryan, who she did 117, Ryan did Morphin Masters, and this goes into the next part of it. There was something that happened, and I know I did not put in my reviews a glaring hiccup that I thought was. They picked up on it. I don't know if they did this on purpose or not, or they caught it last minute. There is a lot going on, and like this is not going to sound right when I say this. I am ready for the Darkest Hour to be over.
Okay.
It is not for the fact that the story is taking a year. It is the fact that the story is taking a year and I want it.
Well, I mean, I can understand being a greedy fan. I mean, that's okay to do.
Because the writing's so freaking good. It's more phenomenal.
Yeah, it definitely is. I say everything the Boom Studios has been doing with their Power Rangers books have been great. And if you have not picked up Melissa Flores's run, it's really carving its own legacy in that Power Rangers lore, like completely. So you definitely want to make sure you go check that out. Matt, what are you picking up this week at the comic shops?
Oh man, you know, my boys over at the Hive Mind have put out their fourth and final, for now, issue of Thunderbolts from Marvel. And honestly, man, four issues isn't enough. I need more from this. Bucky is the leader. You can tell he's learned from Steve. You get Doom in this comic book as well, and you're just like, what? It kind of wraps up this short story of them trying to find Red Skull. There's a lot of really, you know, beautiful things with Geraldo Borges, who does some out of this world insane artwork in this comic book. And then it just ends with this moment of just great emotional power, and you're just like, four issues isn't enough. Give me 12, give me 16, give me an entire year's worth run, because it hit every beat. It was great, man. This should be on people's list of reading, because Thunderbolts has been a fantastic run for Marvel.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, the stuff the Hive Mind does, and then you pair him with one of the best artists in the game, Geraldo Borges, who, I mean, is killing it right now. No one, Thunderbolts, and I mean, Dick Tracy is coming up too. Seen some of the pictures from that. Like I say, there's a lot of great things he has lined up. So pairing these two together, I fully agree with you. This series has been so much fun to read. So I'm hoping that we come back with the same creative team and definitely want to see more of them in the near future with this lineup too, because I think what they've done is great. For me, I got two picks this week, starting off with the book that came out today. It's one of our favorites here at Nerd Initiative, and it's one that continues to impress me each issue out, and that is by our good friend Tim Sheridan, who came by Turn a Page not too long ago. Alan Scott, The Green Lantern, number 5. So if you haven't been picking this series up, this has been such a delightful read. I am just been hooked on each and every issue. Tim was gracious enough to break away of his schedule to talk to us a couple weeks ago. And this issue definitely is setting up for a phenomenal finale. Like I say, I'm super excited about what is going on here. And if you haven't checked this out, make sure to try tracking it down at your comic shops. It is definitely setting a high bar of storytelling. I could rave about this all day, but I just trust me, pick up the issue and you will not be disappointed. My other pick for this week is what is going to be leading off our new Comic Book Day coverage on Wednesday, and that is The Dead Lucky number 12.
It's a huge one.
Yeah, this is a big issue. Melissa Flores, French Carlomagno, this is massive verse. The battle for San Francisco ends, and you definitely don't want to miss the outcome that is happening here. The Dead Lucky has been a great series since it came out. If you haven't checked it out, it is a superhero story that definitely stands apart from everybody else. It is well worth the time to pick up in the trade paperbacks. And if you have not jumped on board for this current arc, definitely make sure you keep an eye out for this at the comic shops this week.
Is that Melissa Flores twice on our top picks this week?
Yes, it is.
Golf claps to her. Golf claps. Sorry, we have sensitive mics.
Yes. But and Melissa's just doing monster things too. So we are long overdue to have her come on the show.
Why haven't we?
Agreed.
Scheduling.
Oh, yeah, because she's that freaking busy.
She's busy.
Yeah.
She put in work.
We're putting the karma out there because rest assured, I would say sooner than later.
You reach through the Massiverse, I'll reach through the Morphin Grid.
Then that's how we do it here. So before we get on out of here, let us say where you can find us and what's going on with each and every one of us this week. So let's start with Matt. What's going on in Hops Geeks Newsland?
Man, first of all, if you want more X-Men, I just got to show y'all real quick. You know,
look at that.
My signed first ever page of the X-Men animated series from Eric and Julie Lewald, who, mind you, recently came through the show last week. That episode, check that one out. They dive into all sorts. Eric was the showrunner. Julia was a writer for the original X-Men animated series. Check that out. And then if you want more X-Men, you know Lauren and I went through and we talked about the first two episodes on this most recent episode of our show that came out this week. And we also talk about GalaxyCon Richmond, where I had two panels, phenomenal time. But yes, if you want more X-Men, check us out right there on that QR code. And this coming week, we're going to be recording about Godzilla, where I'm very excited to announce that my 8-year-old son is going to be making his podcasting debut.
Let's go.
He's such a Godzilla fanatic. He's been taking notes. He's been writing down everything. He's very excited to come on. And so he's going to join us to talk about his favorite Godzilla moments with us this week. So
he's
going to
be Godzuki. He's Godzuki, Annie.
He is.
But you know what? It's going to be awesome to catch him on the show. I'm super excited to go. I mean, obviously, I'm subbed up. So everybody listening or watching, you should be subbed up to Hops Geeks News. Should be very, very easy for that. Tom, why don't you let everybody know what's going on with you and the Off the Cuff brand?
Off the Cuff is just Off the Cuff, wherever Off the Cuff's going to be. Right now, I've been busy actually going back and watching Matt's interview that he did with the X-Men writers. It's a really good episode.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Like, it's fantastic.
I'm like, I want to be there, too. I can guest host, guys. Hello. But other than that, I had a phenomenal time up at Syracuse Collectors Con. I got to see some of my Ranger friends, finally meet, just slashing off a few other names off my list of people who I didn't know. We've had a phenomenal time. I can't wait to go back and do it next year. We had all the seats full, standing room only. Like, it was great.
Not only did we have
it here on the Nerdnish of YouTubes, some of the other Rangers had it up on their own personal social medias. I think last count, we were at over 3,500 views between all of them all added up together. So I guess I might be doing something okay. Other than that, I'm right here every Tuesday night.
Absolutely, man. Congratulations. Everybody's crushing it right here at the Nerdnish of Bullpen. As for yours truly, well, we love those QR codes. So boom, right there underneath, you can hit that. New episodes are dropping from the ODPH podcast this week. And we have a very special edition dropping next Monday night. So to give a little tease of what's happening, obviously you follow nerdinitiative.com. You know that each and every Wednesday, new comic book day, we have you covered for the latest and greatest in all reviews. Next Wednesday, April 3rd, as we are recording, is shaping up to be arguably the biggest release date of the year.
Can I say it?
Don't say who's coming, but you can say it.
Ghost Machine Day!
Yes, it is Ghost Machine Day.
Acknowledge them.
Yes. And there's a lot of great books to be picking up there. They're going to be leading. They're making a big splash. Minor Threats, The Fastest Way Down is finally coming out, too. And a certain return of one of my favorite series is the coolest book at the comic shops each and every time it drops. And there's a little special episode coming out on Nerd Initiative YouTube and ODPH podcast next week, kind of kicking that off too. So to give a little tease about that, a great friend of the show is returning to talk about said book, and I can't wait for everybody to hear that interview. So definitely make sure you're subbed up so you won't miss any of the content when it happens. And trust us, nobody is going to be covering New Comic Book Day next week like Nerd Initiative and the Bullpen, setting that benchmark each and every week, folks. That's what we do here. But before we get out of here, obviously, I want to give a shout out to our guy in the chair.
Guy in the chair.
3FN Podcast. You want to talk about movies? You definitely go check out what is going on with 3FN Podcast. They covered Ghostbusters Frozen Empire this week. It's a great episode, too. Great pairing with the comic that is coming out this week as well. So you definitely want to make sure you're subbed up to what is going on there. And we're talking subs every Thursday night, Eastern Standard Time, Wrestling Night Live, where Rich, new guy Nick, and myself talk everything in the land of pro wrestling. There's a lot going on heading into the showcase of the Immortals WrestleMania. So you definitely want to make sure, if you're a pro wrestling fan, you are checking that out as well. And then, because we have to, because of contract reasons, if you want to get some Nerd Initiative merchandise, no better place than to click on that QR code and go support the brand, whether it's a hoodie, whether it's a thermos, whether it's a sticker, whatever you do, you want to celebrate the home of pop culture positivity, go click on that. And last but certainly not least, that homework assignment one more time, because if you do that, it'll take you right to nerdinitiative.com. Because if you click on that subscribe button to YouTube and you click on that bell notification, you won't miss a minute of the content. And then you click on that thumbs up for the to let the bosses know that you like the content you're seeing. Boom, you will see more of that showing up on this channel. Because trust us, change is coming, folks. And a lot more programming is on the way. So definitely, you don't want to miss out on that.
Don't forget the LCSs.
And of course, the LCS above me each and every week. So you definitely click on that QR code and it'll take you to the LCS in your neighborhood. And go support them, obviously, on New Comic Book Day. And then hit us up and let us know what you are picking up at the shops this week, because we definitely like to talk about New Comic Book Day each and every day here on Nerd Initiative. That being said, we'll end it like we always end it. When you're at a comic book shop and you have a great issue in your hand, such as Uncanny X-Men 200, and you see somebody struggling to find theirs, hand yours off to them. Tell them to turn a page. We'll see you next week.
I'm out.